She was lovely. Damn it, Mom, I say, unable to help it, the anger that's rising. Damn what, Ruth, she says quietly, and already I regret what I've said, what I'm about to say. What, I say, are you trying to accomplish here? She puts the platter down. It seems as though she might smash it, but instead she takes a glass from the table and begins polishing that. I don't appreciate that tone, Ruth, she says, very calmly, the way she always used to say it. She doesn't mean anything to him anymore, I say. And what, she says very flatly, could you know? I know you don't deserve this shit, I say. Things are over between her and Dad, whatever the things were. None of this is your fault. Mom doesn't respond. She looks only a little ruffled, as though someone has unexpectedly handed her a warm water balloon. He doesn't even remember, I say. She says nothing. I know this means, but I do. She ignores my question. What she says instead is, you have no right. And it shouldn't surprise me, this asserting of herself, but it does. Why couldn't you visit, Ruth? She asks, quietly. Why couldn't you manage to visit? This, I don't know how to answer. Truthfully, I didn't want to see you suffering. I didn't want my fears confirmed. It was less terrifying this way. Not helping you, not saving you, just leaving you all alone. And then, quietly, she adds, this wasn't how I thought it would be. It, I say. Having a daughter, she says. She removes her gloves and hands them to me, all without saying a word. It's fine, she says, quietly, leaving me to finish the dishes. May 22nd. Today, home from work, she skips dinner and retreats to the master bedroom. She's put a comforter on the couch in the study for my father. No pillow, so I give him one from my bed. He seems genuinely confused. May 23rd. She leaves the house for work and gets home after dinner. I ask where she's been, and she says only, swimming, and locks the bedroom door behind her. May 24th. Night 3, and my dad bangs on the door and shouts, Annie! I love you! Like it's a dorm building, and he's 19 and declaring his affection dramatically. But it doesn't open. We think maybe she's crawled out the window. It's always this. Someone on one side of a door, someone on the other. I remember one late night in college, I was in the dining commons, bracing myself for the long night of studying ahead, putting a tea bag in the mug of hot water to steep. Outside it was snowing, which was a marvel for that first year of college, having just moved from California, and tedious for the other 2.5. I was watching the snow. Linus had called, upset because my father wasn't coming home and my mother was being her usual self, too patient and too forgiving, and Linus thought she was being unreasonable, being unreasonably patient. And Linus really, truly wanted to do something about it, but he didn't know what he could do. And neither did I. It's like she thinks she deserves it, Linus had said, or something. That makes no sense, I'd said. Outside, kids I recognized from my dorm were patting snow into giant men, snow people engaged in erotic acts. It doesn't matter who remembers what, I guess, so long as somebody remembers something. May 28th. Today, you asked me what dick meant, and while I was deciding what direction I should take, you said, Mom said you were one. Today you put on your mother's earrings inside your ears, and we had to shake them out. Today you asked me, what are nerds? And when I said, They're people who are smart and really interested in studying a subject. You said that your mother had told you there were no nerds in your elbow, and that's why it didn't hurt when you pinched there. Nerves, I thought, but didn't correct you. I rip up the page. I mean to throw the pieces away, but can't. I put the pieces into my pocket to throw away later or to forget to take out of my pocket and have destroyed by the washing machine. It's all so messed up. I think what it is that when I was young, my mother was her best version of herself. And here I am now, a shitty grown-up and messing it all up and a disappointment. What imperfect carriers of love we are, and what imperfect givers. That the reasons we can care for one another can have nothing to do with the person cared for. That it has only to do with who we were around that person. What we felt about that person. Here's the fear. She gave to us, and we took from her, until she disappeared. May 29th. At 4 this morning, there is loud knocking at the door and someone shouting, "Police!" From the top of the stairs, I see my mother and Linus squinting at the cops. There was a woman, a man, shining their flashlights and asking if this is Howard Young's house. Mom says it is. "He was two streets over, sitting on a porch," they say. "We got a phone call. The neighbors were worried." And there is Dad behind them, in only boxers.
"Well, it looks like your clothes are here," says the man cop.
The pants and shirt are spread across the couch. They look as though they've been laid there. The cop reaches into his pants pocket.
"Seems like your wallet is here, too."
Dad looks stunned. He sits down. Mom thanks the police, and when they are gone, she sits beside my father, who starts to cry. Still wordlessly, she wraps her arms around him, kisses him on the side of his face, and repeats very softly, "Stupid, stupid, stupid," and kisses him some more. This is how we leave them. May 30th. Sometimes what I wonder is if it counts, I hope, for anything. All that time with Joel, I mean. There was the day, for example, we went fishing and used chicken nuggets as bait. What I remember is the day itself, brisk with a breeze, and what the sun looked like, and how we laughed. In the end, we threw back all the mullet we caught. "Christ, these fish eat chicken," was what I had said.
"Christ, these fish eat nuggets," Joel said.
Then he ushered me into Tommy's, where we drank pitcher after pitcher of sangria until the sugar became too much to bear. That was a good night. But here I'm conceding it wasn't anything. What I want to know is what counted for something and what counted not at all. Now I feel like a shit for spending that time, that's the word it's convention to use, spending, on what turns out not to matter, and neglecting the things that did and do. After Joel and after Franklin, there was, very briefly, a painter named Adam who used to say,
"Bourgeois,"
and it took me a long time to realize he meant bourgeois. But I forgave it, because who am I to judge? For a long time, I thought touche meant touchy, and also that homely meant resembling home. After the breakup, which was nasty, an envelope came in the mail from Adam. There was no note, only a piece of string. I couldn't figure it out. I kept it laid out on my desk until I realized what it was. String cut to the length of the circumference of his penis. David, the attorney, took me on 3 dates, each of them to steakhouses. Always, it seemed, he would eat and drink less than I did. It caused me this private anguish. The second date, at a different steakhouse, over another top sirloin, he said,
"I'd like to do this again."
And as he said it, I knew that I didn't. Patrick was a policeman. He was mild and kind, and he looked all right. Late one night at somebody's housewarming party, he turned to me and held my right hand in both of his as though he had something important to say.
What is it?
I said.
I was thinking,
he said. He wasn't very bright and really looked like he had been.
You know the rescue dogs after 9/11?
He said.
The ones who would look for survivors in the rubble. Something I heard the other day is that during the searches, they would grow depressed, going long stretches of time without finding anybody. The relief workers would take turns hiding in the rubble so the dogs could find them and have the strength to carry on.
You're calling me a dog? That's what you're doing? I said, drinking my beer, which was by now warm. I had been struggling to identify the taste while Patrick was talking, and now I realized what it was. Tortillas. This beer tasted like tortillas. Listening to Patrick, I'd been hoping against hope, that much was clear. He had something to say that could change my mind.
No, what I'm saying is, I could be the relief worker, Patrick said. I could surprise you. It could give you strength to go on.
Look, I'm sorry, Patrick, I said. It just doesn't work, I said. If you tell me how it's supposed to go. There was a pause then.
I'm sorry, too, was what he said, finally.
The other day, talking with Bonnie, I said something about Joel. Something reminded me of Joel, and I mentioned it offhandedly. We fell into a silence. If I were you, I'd forget about Joel, she said. I didn't mean anything. I know you didn't. I'm just saying, if I were you, I'd forget about him.
If I were you is something I've never really understood.
Why say, if I were you? Why say, if I were you, when the problem is, you're not me? I wish people would say, since I am me, followed by whatever advice it is they have. I have always felt bad about the year of friendship that Bonnie and I lost. The year I left college to be with Joel in Connecticut, Bonnie and I fell out of touch. She kept asking if being with him, leaving college to do that, was a good idea, and I, not wanting to entertain the possibility that it might not be, stopped returning her calls. When I finally answered one, 2 months later, she didn't bother to pussyfoot. This is a dumb idea, she said. You're not thinking this through. You went to art school, I said, meaning that doesn't even count as college. I'm trying to help, she said, before hanging up. And you're being a bitch. She's since told me that year we didn't speak, she had an afro. What a thing to have missed. On the Alzheimer's message board, I introduce myself and write, I don't know if I'm cut out for this. This job is for someone purer of heart. And the responses come.
No one here has never not thought that.
Your heart is in the right place, or close enough.
Your heart has nothing to do with this.
You know what the origin of that phrase is, cut out? It's from tailors, having their cloth cut out for them. Things that take up room in my brain that I wish didn't. 3.14159265. The names of all the world's major and minor streets. The entire screenplay of Mrs. Doubtfire. How to turn an unwritable VHS tape into a writable one. Tape over the little square in the lower right-hand corner. We didn't start the fire. Ditto, Gangsta's Paradise. The catalog of movies Joel has seen at least up until last year. Parakeet diseases. Various taxonomic ranks. The knowledge that the King of Hearts in a deck of cards has no mustache, while the King of Spades, Clubs, and Diamonds do. Dad's study is a mess. It's my fault for not checking it out sooner. The smell, when I open the door, is awful. There are half-eaten sandwiches in the drawers, and there's mold on the bread. It looks like Dad has ripped pages from books and is assembling the disparate pages. There's one stack of pages he's rebound with craft glue and construction paper, as though he's building a better book, compiling a book of separate books, a book that would improve upon the originals. There is a bedsheet draped over the fish tank, and who knows how long it's been there. The fish are still swimming, but their bodies seem drained of gold. They're small ghost fish. I call the pet store, and it's Bill who answers. He says not to worry. Goldfish cells produce pigment in response to light. Leave a goldfish in the dark, he says, and in time it will turn completely white. Downstairs, my father has peeled a clementine, and now he's sitting at the table looking at this skin that's fallen from the fruit in the shape of two perfect lungs. Here, now I'm wishing things were different. The other day I read that patients in later stages of the disease will eat the entire banana or orange. They will fail to recognize the peel. It's a terminal disease, all the literature keeps saying. But isn't everything terminal? Is what I say to nobody out loud. June 1st. And then, somehow, it gets better. Dad, Linus, and I go for morning walks, and on our walks, we notice bicyclists having a good time. We tell ourselves we'll dust our bikes off and bike around ourselves. And another day, we follow through. We ride our bikes past the community pool and vow to bring our swimsuits back for a swim, which we do. We stop at the grocery store for cruciferous vegetables. Linus borrows DVDs from the library. Movies we've never heard of. And mostly, they're bad. But still. June 2nd. We're at the store looking for capers and can't find them.
Can I help you?
The employee asks.
We're looking for capers, Dad says.
That's a kind of fish, right?
It's like a tiny olive, I say.
Somehow, she leads us straight to them.
June 3rd. I've bookmarked a recipe I want to try. Patate con agnello scappato. Potatoes with escaped lamb. There is no lamb. From now on, I'm going to make macaroni and cheese with escaped beef and rice pilaf with escaped pig. Linus is in the guest room, supposedly writing. I can hear Dad singing in the bathroom, revising Smokey Robinson. Though she might be cute, she's just a prostitute. You're my permanent one. Mom joins me in the kitchen, not saying anything. She picks up a peeler and starts to peel potatoes. It's her first time in the kitchen in who knows how long. I'm too surprised to comment. Out the window, our new neighbors rollerblade by. The woman in her sports bra, the man wearing knee pads. Obviously mad at each other, but unwilling to neglect their exercise regimen, skating angrily. From across the kitchen, Mom tosses a peeled potato into the stock pot. I try and miss. It lands in the carafe of coffee, splashing coffee everywhere. Mom shoots another one perfectly into the stock pot. Mine flies out the window. Mom laughs and laughs.
There's a potato in my coffee,
Linus remarks later. Potato? Mom and I say innocently at the exact same time. We crack right back up. June 5th. Mom isn't in the mood for driving, so I drive her to the doctor's office for her regular physical. I nearly hit a stopped car, looking at the reflection of her pretty, just graying hair in the windshield. This is a fact. My mother is beautiful. When she was 19, she broke her back and after it healed, got a tattoo over the damaged vertebra. As a teenager, she chipped her front tooth on a jam seed. Her eyes have always made me think of pitted olives, the way they remind you, in case you've forgotten, that pupils are empty. In the waiting room, under the fluorescent light, her transparent, vein-rich wrist holding a water bottle looks even more transparent. I never once heard my dad say she looked pretty. Instead, he'd say, "Annie, you look so memorable." During the worst of it, my father was regularly carrying gin to class in a clear plastic water bottle. There was a day my mother found him passed out on the couch, with his shoes and tie still on, sleep-talking as though to a classroom. When my mother noticed him, she took off his shoes, removed his tie like a wife who might greet her husband home from work. Then she unbuttoned his shirt and gently lifted him out of his pants and boxer shorts,
and left him to sleep in the nude in the living room until morning. She is telling me now that why she did this, out of kindness or malice, she still isn't positive. "You know what I miss the most?" I remember her telling me once on a vacation to Mexico we took together in my sophomore year of college, after we'd had a couple of margaritas. "I miss that time your dad broke his leg." He'd fallen from the apex of an A-frame ladder. He'd ascended in the first place to extract leaves lodged in the basketball net. That was a long time ago. I was 14. After the injury, they would practice walking backward. It was doctor's orders, because going backward puts less strain on the knees. Mom would hold both dad's arms as he proceeded slowly in reverse, even up and down the stairs. He needed her, and that's what she missed. "Of course he needs you," I'd said. I still don't know if it was true back then. In any case, it was becoming true now. It was what my mother had wanted. Although these circumstances were different, perhaps, from what we had pictured. In a tabloid in the waiting room, I read that Blake Lively's mother, lacking blush, once licked an Advil and rubbed its pink on her cheeks. Dr. Lung talks differently to my mother than he does to my father. When my mother asks him how he's doing, he tells her. He tells her that they went on a vacation, he and Mrs. Lung without the kids, to the Bahamas.
"You see this?"
he says happily, removing his glasses, showing her the white stripes of skin on his temples and nose, hidden behind the band, evidence of his tan. Nearing the end of the appointment, Lung says that caregivers will often ask him what they can do. "There's nothing really to do," he says. "Just be present." "Like in the moment?" I say.
"I meant around," he says. "But sure, that too."
June 6th. The present. There's this woman in the same aisle of the supermarket, curling a large dog bone like it's a barbell. June 7th. The present. Glancing in the mirror, I notice a segment of noodle on my cheek, but I can't remember the last time I ate noodles. June 8th. The present. We pound schnitzel with Dad's dictionary that we've plastic wrapped. June 11th. The present. He doesn't mention Joan. He doesn't mention the physicist. June 12th. The present. He's saying everything with a southern twang and making Mom laugh and laugh. The present. Mom laughs so hard, she loudly farts. June 13th. The present. Linus and I are lifting Bonnie's couch from the moving truck to our new living room. Vince, Bonnie explains, is shooting a commercial for Audi. The present. On the freeway, on the drive back, I notice a black truck that says, "Eat more endive," on the side. The present. I scream. "That's Carl!" The present. "Drive, drive, drive!" I command Linus. But when he pulls up beside the truck, it isn't Carl after all. This trucker is fatter and paler.
"Who's Carl?"
Linus asks. "He drives endives," I say, so disappointed. June 14th. The present. I wash the windows and clear from the sill what seems like 100 perished ladybugs. June 15th. The present. Linus cooks us French toast for dinner and we're out of syrup, so we go to the door of a new neighbor and inquire. She has a little Aunt Jemima. June 16th. The present.
A little boy walking between his parents screams, "I don't like dogs," when a pair of joggers jogs by with their chihuahuas.
His mother leans down to whisper something. Maybe tells him that's not appropriate.
In response, he clarifies very loudly, "I don't like small dogs."
June 22nd. The present. I chip out a tile in the bathroom. I start to pull on the caulk, and it comes out in one long strip. Like it's the tub's hangnail.
June 23rd.
The present. The carpet cleaners are here. We push all the furniture, the coffee table, and ottomans and armchairs to the tiled kitchen. The shampoo takes the morning, and afterward we open the windows and sliding glass doors to rid the room of the chemical smell. The present. I go to the store to buy milk, and when I get home, there is my dad, perched on top of the coffee table, head between his knees in the crash position. Like he's on a plane about to make an emergency landing.
June 25th.
The present. Mom's asleep and it's just the two of us, past midnight, watching TV, and Dad says,
"You're my daughter?"
"I'm your daughter," I say.
"You sound different,"
he says. "How?" I say.
"More sonorous,"
is what he says. "Well, thank you," is what I say.
June 29th.
The present. The phone rings and it's Theo asking, "Do I want to get breakfast tomorrow?"
June 30th.
The present. We're eating eggs. He's telling me about visiting his older sister and her toilet paper roll holder that plays Ring of Fire when you unspool the toilet paper.
"Why Ring of Fire?" he's asking, and not something more relevant.
"A boy named Pooh,"
he says. "Pee of heartbreak?" I try.
"Exactly,"
he says. Now he's lifting bacon and asking,
"So you and Joel, that was your longest relationship?"
I tell him about the time after the breakup when I was sitting in the park having a picnic alone. A pigeon flew overhead and shat into my Tupperware of macaroni. How I considered simply scooping the shit out and continuing my meal. How my friend Sam, who drives a refrigerated truck, he delivers produce and meat to restaurants in the marina, was the one who helped me move to that new apartment. We unloaded it all together, and at the end, Sam patted me respectfully on the back like I was an old dying dog and wished me luck. And I laughed, like, of course it was all under control. Sam liked Joel and me equally, or so it seemed then. He hadn't chosen sides. How that first night, everything was cold. The couch was cold, the lamps were cold to switch on. My bed too big and too cold, and my body couldn't make enough heat to fill it. How I'd swat at moths and reprimand myself. "You're so mean," I once said, loudly, to me. And then it became pronouncing foreign labels out loud. "Yerba mate," I caught myself saying, really rolling the R. "Jalapeño," I read the can, like a crazy, broken up with person. How one of those first nights walking home to what should have been our new apartment, it was after midnight and I'd had a few drinks, 2.5, like rooms advised, not too many. And there was a hunched over man with an eye stitched shut and a mouth of glinting gold teeth sitting on a stoop. And when I tried to walk fast past him without making eye contact, he said,
"Be safe."
"Thank you," it took me a moment to say. The present. I'm saying, "Your turn." She was his college girlfriend. They met in their junior year of college on the ultimate frisbee team. She whooped him good. She had a beautiful voice. Has, I mean. "Was she your longest?" I ask.
"Not the longest," he says, "but the most severe." They broke up because things didn't feel right, according to her. But 2 weeks after the breakup, she was cavorting openly with a photographer who took her pictures and posted them on the internet. Thea would have dreams set exclusively in dark rooms, everybody whispering and glowing red. This is what he's telling me now, in the present. I'm not cheating here. The present. Thea reading from Dad's textbook in a Katharine Hepburn voice. The present. Me saying, but why did everyone talk like that back then? Like Katharine Hepburn. The present. Theo dipping a chocolate-covered cookie into his tea and it dissolving immediately. And his panic. The present. Me laughing uncontrollably. The present. Me remembering, don't get me wrong. It was what Joel had said. But I did. I got it all wrong. And? Be present. And the words falling behind me quickly into the past, too. July 1st. Sugar ants have crawled into the space beneath my laptop keys. This happened after I ate a popsicle over my computer. They've taken up residence, and now they won't leave. For a week, they've been my tiny advisors. I'll type, what color blouse? And wait for an ant to come up. If it crawls out from R, that means red. And if it crawls out from P, that means purple. And if it is a yes or no question, I'll wait for the ant to crawl out of either the Y or N or accept whatever comes closest. I've taken an A for no, a Z has stood for yes. The questions tend not to be serious because, even to myself, I prefer not to appear insane. Primarily, I've been asking, what should we have for dinner? Should I attend this party in Irvine or this one farther away in Highland Park? I've been asking, am I a good enough person? Yes or no? July 4th. On the 4th of July, Uncle John forgets the ice. The fridge is full of food, broccoli and things that are not broccoli, and everyone is too lazy to drive to the store, so our sparkling lemonade stays warm. We watch fireworks from lawn chairs in the backyard. The highlights include a smiley face firework, the eyes first burst together, then the mouth, and a green and gold firework that looks like a palm tree, green on the outside like leaves, gold on the inside like a trunk. Hungry again later that night, we eat the hot dogs cold and without buns because we've run out, and we wipe the grease on Dad's stained old apron that says, Boss of the Sauce. Theo and I clink our warm lemonades together, then our cold hot dogs. Do you have a picture of her on your phone? I ask. Who? He says. The most severe, I say.
Only if you show me yours.
Deal. Theo goes first. It's a close-up taken by Theo. Their faces and happiness fill the frame. They were camping, it looks like. Behind them I can make out their sleeping bags, pushed very close together, and only one pillow. One of those long king-size ones they were sharing. The photo was taken during a week they spent in Yosemite. On a night during that trip, they forgot to throw their food out and a bear came to their tent.
We thought this was it. We were going to die, Theo said. We made a promise that if we made it out alive, things would change.
She'd whispered, I give you my word. They had held hands and said they loved each other.
This happened in the span of like a minute, Theo says.
A moment later, the bear looked at them and ambled away, wholly uninterested. The photo I have is from a vacation Joel and I took to Florida. We rented a car and we drove from Connecticut to Key West. We were squinting in the sunlight. At one of the rest stops, he had second thoughts about leaving my iPod exposed, so he put a receipt over it, like that would deter thieves. We were celebrating the job Joel had gotten. We had splurged on an expensive hotel with walls so white they hurt to look at directly. The hotel had a pillow menu. From the hotel window, we could see the small brown people stretched out on the sand like iguanas. And even smaller, the actual iguanas. Our photos aren't so different, just some happy coupleness. I detect something like pride in Theo's voice, talking about her. It's not overt, but it's there. I notice the pride, because talking about Joel, I can hear the disappointment in my own. She is very pretty, though, I think later. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? I chase the thought. July 5th. Even though I know it will give me nightmares, lately I can't stop searching the internet for feral goldfish. They have huge bubbly faces. What happens is people flush their goldfish, presumed dead, down the toilets. They get into the waterways and grow and grow and grow, sometimes to the size of soccer balls, according to these photographs. Dad, I shout, come here.
Is it important?
Very. And he knows from my voice that I want to show him an enormous fish with a huge bubbly face. I do.
You're a monster,
he says pleasantly.
Let's see it.
This one was fished out of a lake north of Detroit. The fisherman is holding the body, and his young son, in tears, is holding on to an enormous fin like it's his mother's dress. The fish itself has its translucent eyelids hanging down, and it looks to be asleep. I hope it is. July 9th. And now, as of today, I'm 31 years old. As a birthday present to myself, I sneak onto campus, into Levin's office, and glue the caps to all of the pricks' pens. I consider what else I can do that won't get me arrested. I brought birthday gin with me to campus. It's in a clear plastic water bottle, an homage to my father. I'm using one of those dwarf bottles, which, under ordinary circumstances, I consider wasteful and absurd. Now I'm throwing bills maniacally into the fountain outside the Life Sciences building. Students going to their summer classes pick up their paces and hold their books closer.
Ruth,
I hear, about $10 later. It's Theo. He's walking toward me, holding something that looks like a deck of cards. As he approaches, I see that it's an ice cream sandwich.
That's a wish you want badly,
he says, noticing all the paper money afloat. He looks all around us like he's looking for the money tree that dropped its leaves. He sits down, finishes the sandwich and a few solemn bites, and stands up to throw the wrapper away. When he sits back down, he sits closer, points to the bottle, and says,
May I?
I shrug and hand him the bottle. He takes it. I knew it started being over with Joel when I'd open a bottle of wine and he wouldn't drink it. Sharing things is how things get started, and not sharing things is how they end. Theo is looking nicer than usual, I think. But then again, I'm drunk. Thoughts are springing to mind, and I am dropping them all irresponsibly like dice.
So, what's the wish?
He says, finally. Won't come true, I say.
We both know you don't believe that,
he says, observantly and correctly. And because I am not going to make the same mistake I had when I was a kid, making those 1,000 wishes with Bonnie, all of them lost now, I decide not to keep it to myself. I have him lean over so I can whisper it. He smells like a delicious dryer sheet. What brand of dryer sheet is that? I ask.
Snuggle,
he says, inching closer.
Bullshit,
I say. I inch back.
Seriously,
he says.
It's new. It's supposed to smell like apricots.
You do smell like fruit, I say. I think he takes it as some kind of punchline because immediately after that, he kisses me. Immediately after which, I panic. I better go, I say, and stand up and flee.
You're drunk?
Linus says right away on the phone.
Already? Without me?
Cut it out. Could you come get me? When the car pulls up to the curb and I get inside, Linus, without a word, tosses me a soft package, wrapped in happy birthday paper. The remainder of the tube of gift wrap is in the back seat. Inside there are 4 pairs of socks, quality socks that haven't come from the dollar store, socks without type on the toes. He's rolled them into sock balls. At home, my mother has laid out one of her mother's dresses, a gift for me, and my father has finally conceded that old journal of his.
Happy birthday, Ruth,
the post-it affixed to it says. Another post-it opens to this page.
Today you asked why it was that people say cloudless but not cloudful. Today you made clear you did not know there was a difference in the spelling of pitchers and pictures. You scraped seeds off of bagels and planted them in the flower bed out front. I didn't have the heart to tell you that there's no such thing as a bagel tree. Today, I thought, I'm nuts. I'm just nuts about you.
July 10th. Something else I appreciate about hangovers, you are given the chance to value your regular things. Water, for instance, becomes so delicious and appealing. I like also that having a terrible day pretty much guarantees that the next day will be much, much better.
Ruth, says the voice on our machine.
It's Theo.
Call me, would you?
At the cafe, there are pastries in the display case. Croissants and bagels and bear claws that look like uncomfortable people in a waiting room trapped under bad fluorescent lighting. The man in line in front of me orders a small non-fat cap. A woman orders a salad, rudely.
Hello, shorty, says a lady to a dachshund outside the cafe door. Hello.
I have a staring contest with a gazing baby, and the way the baby, a fellow-born human, looks at me, it's like he is seeing a deep-hidden thing that all the grown people can't. I look away first. I won't call Theo, because here's what I figure. One of us could say, that was a mistake. One of us could say, I like you. One of us could say, I was drunk. Let's please forget it ever happened. The other person could agree or disagree. The other person could waffle. We could say these things, but what would be the point? If it's presumptuous of me to think at some future point things won't work out, then yes, I am being presumptuous. Better presumptuous, I think, than a fucking sucker. Because I'm through doing things that don't count. I'm through with things that don't add up or amount. I'm just through. What Dad wrote.
Today I made you pancakes the shape of Mickey Mouse, and you said, no, it was a butterfly. It had a fat body and small wings. Today you asked me, what does seduce mean? S-E-D-U-C-E. What does it mean? Today you bit off the corners of your sandwich and announced you were taking the edge off. Today you pronounced worse to rhyme with horse. Today I didn't catch you before you swallowed your chewing gum. I looked away for a second and then it was gone. I'm sorry. Today was your birthday, and when it was time for you to blow out the candles, you wouldn't. Time was running out and you were anxious about it. I don't know what to wish for, you told me sadly, after the candles had burned down to nothing. That's okay, I told you. We put new ones in and you successfully blew out this new set. Today you mixed pretend Bloody Marys and used Scrabble tile holders for make-believe celery. It reminded me, I don't not have a drinking problem. Today you put sand in the microwave. You said you were making glass. Today you called your grandmother Small Mom. Today we walked past a cafe's colorful chalkboard and you asked me, why is that son wearing a bra on his face? Those are sunglasses, I told you. Today we read aloud together and you pronounced union like onion. A more perfect onion. You read apply like it was about apples. You are so happy to be learning to read. Today I thought of what I would give to have time just stop here. You're out of my league. I'm waiting for the day you're going to leave me. I'd give all the money I've got, my entire set of teeth, that special silver dollar your grandfather gave me and said would be worth $300,000 by the time you were in college. Any of it, all of it, just to keep you here.
July 11th. Today, Dad says about the last sizes of lumber he needs. Could you write it all down so I won't forget?
Write it all down, is what he says.
Okay, Dad, I say, and do. This morning, Mom was making a sandwich, and you said Swiss cheese holes are called eyes. Your cheese watches you. Today, I cook salmon, and you said it was esculent. Today, you're wearing your old glasses with the old prescription. Today, you tried that old trick you used to do. You would uncap beer with a single sheet of paper. You attempted it today with a bottle of ginger ale, but couldn't manage. Today, I wish that you had taught me. Today, you said, I'm shitting bubbles. What could it mean? I'm no expert, so I called to make the appointment with Dr. Lung. We were all set to go until I remembered that I'd dropped the remainder of the bar of soap into the toilet by accident. You'll be okay, Dad, I told you. And here's why. Today you cut into an onion that looked like Batman. Today you said the sunshine was a stick of butter.
You could cut through that with a knife, you said.
Tonight I peeled peaches and we sat beneath the mostly done pergola. And in the moonlight, your face was tired and lined like the underside of a cabbage leaf. And I wondered what I look like to you. Today you wandered to the park. And I found you sitting on the sloping part of the hill in the clover blossoms, eating from a big bag of chicharrones and drinking a Coke and watching kids on the diamond throw a ball around. The vendor had wheeled his cart right up beside you, keeping an eye out like a stealthy babysitter. He gave me a small nod when I approached, handed me a Coke to match yours. How long has he been here? I asked. Meaning you, how long had you been here? But the vendor only shrugged, as if to say, not to worry. It had been no trouble at all. When I sat down beside you, we clinked our Cokes together. You handed me a chicharrón. We watched the kids. You mentioned that there were some things on your mind, but lately you were having trouble getting to them. Accessing them. You had the feeling that all the thoughts were in a box covered in tape, and the trouble was there was too much tape, and the trouble was you didn't have the proper tools to access them. No scissors and no knife, and it was a lot of trouble. Every day it was new trouble, trying to find the end of the tape. You told me that in your 20s you had not believed in God, and for a little while you believed in sit-ups and eating right and meditation. And for a time after that, you believed in me and Linus and my mother. And here you were now, unable to open a box that had been tape shut. A box belonging to you. Here you were. Here we both were. You were saying all this, and even as you were saying it, I was trying to figure out how I'd respond when you asked, remind me, what kind of ball is that? I waited for you to say you were joking, and when you didn't, I said, that's a baseball, Dad.
Baseball,
you repeated. Baseball gloves, I said. Baseball bat, baseball diamond.
Gloves, bat, diamond.
You repeated, like this was a game, like this was rock, paper, scissors. August. Today you washed your shoelaces. Today you spoon-fed the neighbor's cat tuna from a can. You've been eating the bananas too early, the ones that are spotless and still tinged green. I've taken to hiding a few from each bunch in the seat of the piano bench. But as of just now, you've located the secret banana stash.
Annie, you marveled to Mom. There's fruit inside the seat.
Today I cooked clams, which I'd never done before. I read you're supposed to put them in water and throw in a handful of cornmeal to encourage them to spit out their dirt, was what I read. The clams spat and spat, coughing like they were afflicted with tiny clam colds. Today you disappeared again and scared the shit out of us. This morning when I called into your study, ready to hand you a mug of coffee, you didn't answer. I knocked, and when I opened the door, you weren't there. Linus and I walked once around the block, then twice,